My name is Victor Kubik, President of the United Church of God. Welcome to another episode of the Inside United podcast. Our guest today is Larry Darden, who is legal counsel for the United Church of God. Larry has been a very good friend of my wife, Bev, and me for many years. He lives in Southern California and stays regularly at our home on his quarterly trips to the home office here in Cincinnati. We consult and work together on various things. Welcome to Inside United, Larry.
Oh, greetings, Victor. So good to be here with you and talk about things that are adjacent to the church, I hope.
Well, I know that'll be very, very interesting for our listeners to hear because we hear about you and know that you are a lawyer. And sometimes that strikes various emotions in people, everything from fear to awe to oh, he's a lawyer. So, we kind of react that way. But being an attorney, as a lawyer, he deals with regulations that govern how things are done in our organization. But first, who is Larry Darden? What's his background? So tell us a little bit about yourself and your background.
I first became interested in the church back in 1967 and baptized in 1969. And that happened in Dover, Delaware. And while I was back there in Dover, I used to go to the courthouse. I said, I could do that. I could be a lawyer. And so that piqued my interest. And then after going to Ambassador College at the church's theology school at the time, I then went into law school and took me about 3 years to do that.
What is the most enjoyable aspect of your work as an attorney?
Other than the minutiae that I've been have to deal with in the church, the contracts and HR and all the things I do for the church, My favorite thing to do is to try to help the brethren with the religious issues, issues of conscience, how to walk the walk in the field.
And I know that people have looked to you as, boy, Larry really helped us with that. He really helped us with being able to get off for the Feast of Tabernacles. That's the thing that I probably heard more than anything else. He helped me with my job to be able to, you know, not have to work on the Sabbath day. But tell us about some of the more interesting aspects of even in the way that you have helped.
Part of my advisory to members who are having a problem, say at work, is I try to be the best employee you can be. So they really want to accommodate you. They don't want to let you go, and they're willing to help you keep the holidays or the Sabbath. So if they want to hang on to you as an employee, they'll probably work, go over backwards. Technically, for discrimination cases, for example, they have to accommodate you if they can do it without an undue hardship. Undue hardship, can be de minimis or it can be hard depending on how well they like you. So if they want to get rid of you, they can probably find a way. So I help people with case law and so on to present to their employer if they're having a problem, to say that you have a duty to accommodate, and this kind of trumps, any other employee saying, no, we don't like that.
Now, in my experience, I was a pastor of people that had to go and find advice legally, through the church about, how to be able to keep the Sabbath. And even when there's a law or even when there's a company policy saying that you must work on the Sabbath day, like you said, if you're a bad employee, this is a good way for them to get rid of you. However, you may find that if you're an indispensable employee, or in my case, I was a student in a math class and had to ask the professor, who was of Indian descent, it was difficult to understand, and I was wondering, how he would take my request. And I told him about the Sabbath and keeping it. And I found all of a sudden he was very interested in my plea. He was very interested in me wanting to ask for time off. And he started engaging me, and I engaged him in a conversation. He was a calculus professor at the University of Minnesota. And I found that after a discussion, which was probably no more than 5 minutes, that he was very open to accommodate my particular desire to be able to take an exam. This was a quarter exam at a different time. And even though the policy stated that, you had to take it and there didn't seem to be any wiggle room in the regulations. So You give advice to people, you know, to take those types of measures, but maybe even you have to go beyond that.
Right. They want to keep the good students. They don't want them to drop out. If they like you, if you're a good student, even though policy may say we don't have to accommodate you, they'll find a way. If you've got a test scheduled for Sabbath or a holy day, they're happy usually to accommodate you. Now, that's more at the college level. In the high school level, you more or less have a right because the parents kind of control religious teaching for the child. They have a right to take you to the Sabbath service or the holy days. We have plenty of case law. We have very little trouble with the children in high school or younger. But it's the college that are more of a challenge because that you don't have as many rights.
What are some of the other types of matters that you have been an advisor or counsel to?
Matters of conscience. For example, a number of people have questions about jury duty. Can they judge according to man's law? Judge not that you be not judged, they often use, but mostly they would be concerned with righteous judgment. And so we feel that it's not a sin to be on the jury or decide you don't want to be on the jury. So we help people in that way. And I've been on a jury because I figured, hardly ever does an attorney get on a jury.
I'll tell you a story about that later.
But I thought, well, if I'm selected, I'll see if I can serve, And I found that the judge is very accommodating, told us about the case, and I found that in the facts of that case, I didn't have to worry about scriptural deviation, like you've got a he said, she said, or something like that, one witness instead of two, and in my case, it was a drunk driving case, so it was kind of a slam dunk. And I very much appreciated the accommodation. I explained to him, if this, this goes against scripture, scripture is going to trump any instructions you give me. And he says, let me know. And if there's a conflict, I'll excuse you from jury duty. And I think most people would find that would be the case. I've never actually found a person who had to be on a jury against their will. So don't worry.
But there are times when, would you recommend a person even stay on for a case?
My son was on a jury case one time. In which it was a battering case of some kind. He said, she said, and 11 people on the jury were willing to find, in this case, a fella guilty, and he was denying he did anything. And Scott kind of raised this, it's a he said, she said, we've got to be careful about, there's no other witnesses, there's no forensic evidence or anything like that. But he turned the whole jury around, just the one guy. So yeah, it can be helpful. But it's a case-by-case basis.
I know that I was once called to jury duty, and I appeared, you couldn't just send a letter in saying that you didn't want to serve. I just wanted to go through the process. So I was impaneled, there up front. Not impaneled, but brought to the jury box, and questions were asked. It was a criminal case of armed robbery. And so the defense attorney started questioning us, the potential jurors, and the first thing she struck me with was, what's your opinion about guns? What do you think about guns, use of guns? And I said, I hate guns. I hate handguns, I think that there's no use for them. I was very open about my feelings. Boy, I was off that jury so fast, you wouldn't believe. And there were two other people on there. Larry mentioned about attorneys. They don't make it to a jury. And the attorney who sat next to me, he was asked, well, are you going to be the smart aleck that'll start guiding the rest of the jury? He said, yeah.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. And so he was off. And a third person was a mortician who said that he had two bodies waiting for him. So, but then, we are called upon to judge righteous judgment. And I feel that, like Larry said, his son was involved in a case where people kind of jumped to a conclusion. And there may be other extenuating or other thoughts about it, where it's not group kind of just rushing to judgment. So what else do you have of that?
Well, usually somewhat a link to jury duty would be swearing. And a lot of times they'll have a particular oath you're supposed to take for jury duty. And we have a lot of case law say, based on scripture, let your nay be nay and your yea be no, don't swear. And so people will be able to affirm, they'll tell the truth. And when we went all the way to Supreme Court in our legal office years ago to establish that the form of how you say you're going to tell the truth is not important. The fact that you say I will tell the truth is good enough. And this one case, U.S. versus Looper, the judge held this person in contempt because they refused to go along with the form of the swearing. And they wouldn't let him testify in his own defense. So went all the way to the Supreme Court. They reversed it, a new trial and all that, and said, it's good enough if you just establish that you're willing to tell the truth. Okay, so the form doesn't matter. And if anybody has that problem, I would suggest that if you ever have to testify, if you ever call as a witness, you clear ahead of time, before you get on the stand, that, look, I want the other form of the swearing in, where I affirm to tell the truth. So you don't get up on the stand and say, I can't raise my hand, I can't do that, and maybe hold against you. So clear that ahead of time. Don't have it happen on the stand or at a deposition or something like that.
Well, that's a battle, I guess, that was fought and won by the Quakers, to have the swearing be able to be affirming. I know I've had to do that a number of times. You cross out the word swear and you put in affirm, and I have never had trouble with it. What are some other cases of interest that really stick out in your mind that you might want to share with us?
Well, I remember in the old days, we did establish something that was interesting, and it was a defamation case. I won't go into the details, but it had to do with theology and saying something about someone within the realm of our religion. We were sued, and we established that in the context of an explanation of a religious belief, and you name somebody as an example, that there's a higher standard than just normal falsity. You have to prove, it's what's called the U.S., I think it's the New York Times versus Sullivan case, where you have to show actual malice. We established that in the context of an explanation of a religious belief. So we made law on that.
Well, one thing we can go back to, I know that you were involved in this, in the case of the California state takeover of the Church of God, of the worldwide Church of God.
Right.
And you were very, very involved in it, very, very involved with the litigation that took place over many months. You stuck with it like a bulldog. Dog got a bone.
That was a very scary time because that was 1979. I was a newly licensed shave tail attorney at the time. I had just gotten licensed the year before.
Really? I thought you'd been around for a long time.
No. I was a paralegal before that because I had part-time law school. It took a long time to get through. Yes. So the state had this theory that all assets of a church were held in trust, in that case, for the people of the state of California. And so they had a false claim that funds were being diverted. And so they initiated a takeover of the whole church and appointed a receiver. And it took us quite a while to get that booted. And one of the examples was we had to post a bond in order to get rid of the receiver. We didn't have the millions of dollars in bonds. So they did a kind of a special thing. We find a loophole in the law that if you got people to sign a promise or a bond for $5,000, okay, they could do that. We have thousands of people with $5,000, okay? And so one of the attorneys for the state says, I want to examine each of these to see if they're valid, you know? And the judge says, counsel, these people love this church. You're wasting your time. So we got the bond, we got rid of the receiver, and eventually won the case. I had very good case law and eventually changed the law in California and said, no, the assets of a church are not held in trust for the state. They belong to the church. And if you got a beef with the church, there are processes for examining it without taking them over. Mm-hmm. So that was a lot of lessons in that case.
I remember those years. I was a pastor in Kentucky at that time, and we watched closely what was going on and saw our attorneys working on it. It was a very, very hard time on the church. Now let's fast forward here from 1980 to 40 plus years later, and we come back to government involved in religion and also our Christian liberties, you know, being imprinted upon.
It seems the government has forgotten that we have a First Amendment. And the First Amendment is that government shall not, you know, transgress upon the free exercise of religion or free speech or, you know, or free assembly. A lot of the governments, especially in my state of California, were saying, we don't have to treat churches on an equal basis as secular. We can make them like second tier, you know. So I think the issue was, and a lot of Supreme Court cases were heard at the time, is can you treat churches as second tier? I think what's the word that they used? They were not essential. And so we had to establish, and I helped support some of the organizations that were trying to meet. And the governor of California had a rule. He had these tier session that said churches cannot meet in person, right? Maybe Zoom or something like that. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, massage parlors is fine.
Casinos.
Yeah, casinos, Costco, markets, but not churches. Mm-hmm. So that went all the way to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court said, at the very least, I mean, you can have reasonable restrictions, mask and distancing if you require that for everybody, but you can't say you can't meet, right? You got to treat them the same as Costco, all right?
What has come of it as far as looking on precedents that have been set in some litigation here this past year, where the government has really moved in using pandemic rules? What precedents have been set that are going to be like automatic for churches being able to meet?
Well, I think you have to, because this, of course, these new rules have come in, you know, when COVID is, they're using COVID as an excuse to basically shut down the churches and only use Zoom or something like that. So we have set those precedents that the government can only go so far. There was a case at the turn of the century where they forced people, for example, to get smallpox or pay a fine. Supreme Court said, in a case like that, where you've got a real pandemic, and that was a real pandemic, you know, 50% of people were dying from from that disease, then you can take those steps for the public good to force people to do things they otherwise might have a right not to do. Okay, so that case, they tried to cite that for, you know, churches can't meet. They said, no, that doesn't wash. So. Especially when only maybe 1% in the COVID are in danger of dying. And there's a lot of cases that are saying, wait a minute, our ability to meet, and some churches say, we interpret our scriptures saying that we must meet, right? And we'll go along with the restrictions about distancing, masks, and so on, but you can't bar us from meeting. And you can't use that old case to tell us we can't.
Well, one of the things that's really troubling to Christians, to all of us, is the fact that there is a general turning onto religion, a hatred of God, and also a desire to snuff out religion. What are your thoughts on that?
If you could possibly do it, put your kids in either a private Christian school or homeschool, because they're becoming worse and worse. Of course, it depends on the area. They're starting to do this critical race theory, and it's unchristian. It's actually against our traditions since the 60s about you look at the character of a person, not their skin color, which God doesn't care about skin color. You don't see that Adam and Eve were a particular skin color. We don't know what color they were.
Some people thought they were black and they could have been Asian. Most of the pictures that you do see that they were white.
Yeah, well, that's a prejudicial thing.
Because Eve had the capability inside of her for all the races as
right.
The mother of all living.
Right, right. And you can see in Scripture, and look at the New Testament, that it was colorblind. You don't see anything about that at all.
Now, the big subject right now is the fact that there are vaccines available for COVID-19. And, you know, I have written on the subject here saying that taking the vaccine is not sin, but it's also a personal choice. It's a personal choice as to one wishing to take the vaccine or one not wishing to take the vaccine. But there's been a lot of pressure put on people to being able to attend events or even have certain kinds of work unless they are mandatorily vaccinated. What about the church's statement on that? How can we help our people to make the right choice?
Well, we've treated vaccines as a medical procedure. And like any other medical procedure, people, they for whatever reason, decide they don't want to take that procedure, right? Unfortunately, a lot of times, the medical community won't give you a medical exemption because of a side effect that would be expected in your family or something like that. So lacking being able to get a medical exemption, there are many states that will allow you to have a religious or philosophical exemption. It used to be that they would require you to be, you know, a member of some organized religion that also felt like you did. Now they don't. It's based on your own personal beliefs. There's nothing that's really required from your church to back you up unless they want some statement of sincerity, which is rare. But, you know, you could probably get that. But so we try to guide people into being able to make that decision after they've done thorough research. And we're talking about COVID vaccines right now. But if you look at the history of vaccines over the last 100 years, that and health preventative measures have doubled the life expectancy of humans. You know, smallpox is eradicated. My mom got diphtheria, almost died as a child. That's been eradicated.
So has polio.
Right. So many of the other diseases that killed so many children, right, are no longer a threat. But there may be a vaccine that for whatever reason you think, not for me, right? We respect that. But if you say it is for me, we respect that as well.
It's your choice, and there'll be consequences one way or the other. If you take the vaccine, there may be consequences. And if you don't take the vaccine, you know, there could be consequences. So that's a very private matter. We don't want to become medical practitioners as ministers.
That's correct. And neither is lawyers. I'm not a medical guy, okay? So as I say, it's a choice. If you're immune compromised, then you say it's not for me, for example. If you get really old, you say, all right, there may be some dangers in this COVID vaccine, but getting the COVID means I'm a dead guy. You may consider the vaccine, right?
I grew up in a period of time where in the church vaccines were frowned upon, probably even more than frowned upon. But then I know that in my travels overseas, in particular into South Central Africa, that I couldn't even get through customs or get through immigration to some of the countries unless I took the yellow fever shot.
Me too.
And so I did. I did, you know?
Right.
And I have no compunction about that. It was a very, very simple shot. I didn't even realize I got the jab, you know, and that was my choice.
And sometimes you don't have a choice, especially if you're trying to do the work of God. And if you want to go to different countries that require it, that's a sacrifice, even if you personally don't want to do it.
Well, that's the way I felt. I felt like if I need to do a work and to go to the country and visit people, and that by refusing to do that about something that's has questions both ways, I'm really sort of out of the picture of helping those people. I'd rather take the shot.
And there, as I say, there are states that will allow people to request an exemption from a mandatory vaccination for themselves or children based on their own personal religious beliefs. And they should take that route if that's their belief.
Larry, is there anything else you'd like to tell us?
We're here to help you at the United Church of God to walk the walk as a Christian. And where the government's trying to interfere with that, or an employer or someone else, we're here to try to help out to get a loophole for you.
I was going to avoid that word, but you used it.
Well, thank you very much, Victor, for letting me talk.
Larry, it's just been great talking to you, as we have talked for many hours in the car, on the airplanes, and at our home. We have really appreciated your friendship and giving us insight into so many things that deal with our day-to-day life and day-to-day life of the church. So we also want to thank our audience for joining us today on Inside United. Please tell your friends about our weekly podcast, Inside United. And you can find us easily on the ucg.org homepage. Go to the main menu line, click or tap on podcast, and there we are. You'll have the latest podcast at the very top and all the ones previous. We have over 222 podcasts now that we have produced. We're also on Spotify. Go to podcasts and search for Inside United. You can also find us through your favorite Apple or Android podcasting app. you can write to us at podcast@ucg.org. I really enjoy our email questions and queries and comments about the Inside United podcast. So have a great week. We'll see you again soon.
This is a production of the United Church of God. For more, visit ucg.org.